Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy that we get, that we feel in our heart, that we hold dear. We get it from American politics. My name is Jonah Knight. I'm an independent from Maryland.
Hi, I'm Emily Brewer. I think I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia, but I'm more confused than a teenager.
I'm Greg Matuszak from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I know I'm your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm DJ McGuire from Virginia. I was a Republican, but now I'm apparently a magical wizard.
All right. Find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. That'll be the most fun of your week. And then share our links on your Facebook news feed. And I'm going to guess, DJ, that you are a magical wizard because this week was Free Comic Book Day?
No.
Oh.
Close guess, though.
Okay.
I have found on my Facebook news feed that my decision to vote for neither Trump nor for Clinton has enabled me to elect both of them at the same time. And I don't even have a wand.
I see that. Oh, that explains a lot to me, actually. So it's fascinating. You know, we've sort of talked about this before. And there is this idea that if you refuse to vote for my candidate, then you are de facto voting for your candidate. Are you saying that that's not true?
I consider that to be ridiculously outdated binarism. It was something I never actually used when I was a Republican. My assumption was that if people on our side were what was our side, it is no longer mine. That if they were willing to vote for the Libertarian candidate, then I had to find out why and convince them that the Republican nominee was superior to the Libertarian nominee. And if I could not do that, then I was not going to win their vote. And that was simply the way it was going to be. The notion that if you don't vote for my guy, you're helping the other guy win, I'm sorry, but that's just not the way it works. Our votes are our own. We can do with them what we choose. And the notion that we have to vote for one of the major parties is just not the way it works here. If I choose to vote for a minor party, and I am voting for a minor party now, that's something that I wish to do. And I recognize that my candidate will probably not win, but it is more important to me to vote for somebody that I actually want to be elected, even if the chances of that are slim to none, than to vote for somebody who I do not want anywhere near the White House, just because the other person with a possibility of being near the White House would be just as bad. In my opinion, and I know this, you know, there are a lot of folks who will say, well, there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I don't believe that.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Here.
It is. Okay. In my opinion, the Republican nominee and the Democratic nominee will both damage the country, but they'll damage the country differently. But those differences are not enough for me to pick one over the other. They will both damage the country, and that is enough for me to vote for neither of them. And if that means I manage to elect both of them at the same time, sucks to be you, Muggles.
So, you know what? Just so everyone knows, we're probably going to have a therapy session tonight. So, so we'll be sending everybody a bill.
This has been a tough week for you guys, hasn't it? I mean,
it's been awful. I mean, so you know, I'm in such a bad space, to be honest. You know, I'm still probably going to run for RNC national delegate. I don't know how I feel about it, but, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. Maybe I feel like something, you know, brighter is on our horizon. I know DJ is going to think I'm crazy.
Wait. Just to clarify, and this is all due to Trump, right? And being Republicans.
Correct.
Our listeners.
Right. And I have to say this, is that Trump does not, he has not the visualization, nor does he have any remote policy ideals that are anywhere near what my expectation are. But the other piece of this is that I'm still a Republican for many other down ballot races. I will still vote Republican. I don't know what I'm going to do in November at all. But I don't think we have to worry about that until he is the actual nominee, because at this point it's still presumptive. I pray every single night and every single morning. You know, I think we've got to look at this. So does anybody think it's weird that we've got Bush, we've got Lindsey Graham, we've got Paul Ryan, we have a host of heavy hitters in the Republican Party that are coming out right now saying, I'm not going to support Trump? Why?
I think especially Paul Ryan, who's the chair of the RNC this year.
Highest ranking Republican in the country right now.
Right.
But and, you guys and, think this could be something?
Well, no. Okay, let me say it this way. Okay. Like Emily said, you have all these high-hitting, high-ranking officials, right, who are saying, we are not accepting Trump. In fact, the last two Republican presidents, okay, have said, we're not coming to the convention. Not that the last Republican president has come to the convention, but that's beside the point. They've said, we're not coming to the convention, and we're not supporting him. We're not going to endorse him. This is off the table. And even people who have taken pledges to endorse him have said, we're not going to. But at the same time, this is leadership. This is the GOP leadership. But at the same time, he has won overwhelmingly the last several primaries, way over 50%. And so it's like the base, the Republican base. And I know that's not you guys, you
but
two.
But he's won a plurality, not a majority, to be clear.
Well, he's won, the last couple.
He's won a majority of the last seven states, including Indiana, which was not part of his northeastern base. Right. And here's the thing.
Let me finish the question.
Go ahead, Greg. You finish it.
So when you have your base is saying something, then your leadership, at what point does the leadership have to listen to your base?
Now, if I can answer that question, I would say the leadership has already begun listening to the base. Paul Ryan did not say he was a never Trump. He said, I can't support Trump at this time. He left the door wide open to being able to support him later.
Okay.
Dick Cheney has come out in support of Trump. Bob Dole has come out in support of Trump. John Boehner has said that he and Trump are golf buddies. There are large swaths of the Republican establishment who have done what I expected them to do, which is simply knuckle under and go, okay, let's ride this train and hope we can get off sometime before it crashes.
No pun intended, right?
This is one of the reasons why I chose to actually leave the party. And by the way, it's a very liberating experience, let me tell you, because frankly, the Republican Party is sick. It's diseased. It needs to be put out of its misery. I'm sorry, but the fact that Trump could rampage through these primaries and these caucuses so quickly shows a party, from its leadership right on down to the majority of its voters, that is not interested in limiting government size, scope, and cost. That are not interested in protecting America's interests abroad, however aggressively or over-aggressively they might want to do that. These are people who are just interested in, and I hate to say this, but the Republican Party has become the big government for white people party. That's all they are. That's the one thing that Donald Trump is consistent on, and that is the one thing that binds him and his voters together. And my problem is not Trump per se. Trump is the symptom of the problem. The problem is the voters, the people who are voting for him. They have made the Republican Party into everything that Greg and Kevin warned that they were wrongly up to this year. Now their warnings have actually come true, and I'm not going to be a part of it. I am done. And M, you need to come with me. Get on the lifeboat. The ship is sinking.
Well, so you know what, guys? I am an eternal optimist. So it's like, does anybody find it weird? You know, the whole Paul Ryan thing, whatever. But do you guys think that maybe the Rules Committee, when we get to Cleveland, is going to say, Trump, you violated XYZ, you're banished?
No.
Oh,
come on.
Oh, you know what? All I see then is people literally lighting Trump vodka and making them into Trump Molotov cocktails and Trump firebombing the hell out of Cleveland. I mean, it would be a Trump riot.
Emily.
Can you just not let me try to, you know, skip along?
I don't know what motives Greg had, but Emily, you are my friend. And you have to acknowledge this sort of optimism that you have, and it's utterly naive at this point.
It's delusion, I know.
Yes, but you are basically assuming that these people have the spine to do what you're talking about. There are fish swimming in the James River that have more spine than the entire Republican collective establishment combined. And you and I both know that.
You know what, though? So this is something that brings up a bit what's going on with Democrats. And I want to see if my favorite Democrat agrees. Do you guys feel like this
here,
is...
So I'll answer for him, though.
You're so sweet. At least you know your place.
I know. I know where I stand.
So do you guys feel like this is a year of a more low-information voter with the people that are flocking to Trump and flocking to Bernie and they're, you know, Bernie or bust or Trump train or die or whatever it may be? Do you feel like this is because the media has perpetuated or given people, you know, more information about this election cycle than ever before, that it's the year of the uprise of a more low information voter? And I hate that term, but I think you guys get what I'm saying. People that aren't paying attention like we do.
Well, you know, you say that, but there's just so much information, and there's just, I mean, Trump's everywhere, and Trump couldn't have been where he is if, and we say this all the time, if he didn't get so much free airtime or unearned airtime with every time he would call into something and every time he put out a tweet or every time he'd do something, there was information about it. Now, was it, did these people not know what they were walking into? It's kind of hard to say no.
I have 2 points in that. First of all,
yeah, go ahead.
First, Em, you're not going to really grow our listenership if you're telling all our prospective listeners that they're stupid. So you may want to think about that. Secondly,
we're after a specific target audience. We don't need the stupids.
The educated.
You guys, I'm sorry in advance.
But here's the other thing, and again, this is one of the reasons why I did what I did. If you think about it, Trump has been all over the map on a whole bunch of issues, except for about two or three. Staunchly nativist on the immigration issue, staunchly protectionist on the trade issue, and staunchly opposed to any kind of entitlement reform at all, none whatsoever. How often did Republican candidates actually challenge him on that? No one really challenged him on nativism. Ted Cruz was the only one who challenged him on the protection issue, and he did it a grand total of once in a debate for 5 minutes, and even he went wavy, went waffly on that when he came out against trade promotion authority. And no one, as far as I'm aware, even bothered to discuss entitlement reform. The simple fact of the matter is, as much as we don't like to think this, but it's true, Trump's positions on those issues resonated with far more Republicans than I am certainly comfortable with. And those are really the big reason, I think, that he won. The issues upon which he was running, consistently, mind you, nobody in the party challenged. So there was no debate. Everybody just assumed, oh, well, he's an imbecile. He's a game show host. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's an entertainer.
He's an entertainer. But nobody challenged him on those issues. And if you don't show up at a debate, the guy who does show up is going to win. And he won because nobody challenged him on that stuff. And the fact that nobody challenged him on that stuff was what told me that the Republican Party isn't what I thought it was. Because if the Republican Party that I joined back in the 1990s, they would have beaten the hell out of him on trade. They would have beaten the hell out of him on entitlement reform. Admittedly, the immigration issue would have been an argument, but nobody would have been happy with the rank nativism that he spewed out. None of that happened. That means it's not the Republican Party I remember. That's why I left. And well, I've said that about 6 dozen times now, but that's a fact. He campaigned on certain issues amidst all the fog and all the other nonsense. The things upon which he campaigned, nobody challenged, so they all lost.
So let me ask you guys this. As since Indiana, and he pretty much clinched the nomination at this point, do you guys and we immediately started to see people say, I'm a never Trump, and now I'm going to prove it. I'm going to change my affiliation. These sort of like a party or movement celebrities, if we can say celebrities. Are there any that you found particularly interesting or enjoyable to watch endorse him or separate themselves from him And I'll throw Kevin's out there because he posted it on Facebook. He seemed particularly interested that PGA O'Rourke is now endorsing Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, especially since we butchered his name last week.
Yeah.
and especially since he's a Miami University, which is a fine educational establishment. And I think almost everyone who graduates from there is, you know, a scholar and a gentleman. But yeah,
Greg, I can feel the sarcasm from 1,000 miles away.
No, it's true. They also, everyone who graduates can grow a fabulous mustache. We pay extra for that. But yeah, that's what I actually read that to a group of people I was eating lunch with today, and everyone was like, "Is this important?" I said, "Yes, it's very important."
Yeah.
So
yeah, PJ O'Rourke is somebody who has. You know, that's one of those for those of us of a certain age who know him and who have read him, that'll have more impact than with, say, younger voters. But, you know, there weren't any particular names that flew out that I thought that interested me much. I mean, yes, the Bush family wants nothing to do with him. Truth be told, that in this era, that probably helps Trump more than hurts him. The name that
really stuck out for me was Eric Erickson.
Mm, yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. He's been saying never Trump for months.
I know it says never Trump, but I mean, if you want to talk someone who's conservative, who's red line, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
talk radio host.
Exactly. But I really thought that he would fall in line, eventually, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't. I know William Crystal over the Weekly Standard hasn't. Mitt Romney hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's big enough now, and this actually gets me to the next one of the bullets lower down.
Before we do that, my favorite, and I don't know that it was a surprise, was Mary Matlin.
That was a surprise.
I guess I did.
That was a surprise.
When you think about it, I guess I always assumed she would stay a Republican just because of her relationship with James Carville.
I was saying the exact same thing, Jonah.
But the fact that she did, like, I wonder what their conversations are like now. I don't know. Does he think he won? I don't know.
Yeah, does he just strut around saying, "I got my. This is just like a gator and a barbecue sauce, and I sure woo. I'm not saying I told you so, but how does that libertarian? That's my James Carville imitation. Much like all my imitations.
There are four words that every married man knows are banned from the moment he puts the ring on. They are, "I told you so." It is illegal for any married man to say that. So I don't... Jim Carville is many things. Stupid is not one of them. No. I don't think he said that. No.
Yeah. Emily, did you have a favorite? Was there anybody that particularly struck you as like, wow, I did not expect that?
Mary Madeline was huge to me. She's like, "I'm a libertarian." I'm like, holy crap. Like, is this even real life? I mean, when you have stalwarts jumping ship, then clearly I just need to listen to DJ. But
that's right.
I told you so is coming, I'm sure, soon.
No, nothing like that. I was just going to say, plenty of room for your husband, too. That's all.
he's in a bad way over this as well. So you know, something I think that we really, you know, not so necessary to talk about, but Indiana was pretty impressive, especially for old Bernie Man.
Yeah, Burning Man. I mean, but you know, Hillary made up for it in Guam. So, you know, there's that.
Sure,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, Guam.
Was that before, Jonah? Now, when you took your boss's ship, did you actually make it to Guam in time to vote in that caucus?
I did, and I threw the caucus. Yeah. Yeah.
That would explain why when I heard the footage, there was this "more rum" in the background. It all makes sense now.
I know. Guam's a special place, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, it's not special enough to not stop Hillary because, I mean, she's 155 delegates away from putting Bernie to bedtime. So,
of us are, I think that to one extent or another, we all kind of admire what Sanders has been doing, but I don't think any of us have been an active supporter of him.
Oh, I completely respect what he's doing, but there's going to be a point where, you know, what he does goes too far. And he's now claiming unless Hillary wins without superdelegates, it's a contested convention, which everyone is like, well, that's not what the rules say at all. And maybe if you were a Democrat and read the rules before, you would understand that.
So what if what would you think if she essentially stopped running in a primary and just, you know, campaigned in the primary states, but really just shifted entirely towards the general and just every once in a while kind of mentioned that, you know, like, let's get the vote out. Let's still get some delegates here.
Is that
offensive, or is that just like, this is the reality and I'm still going to show up here, but we have to.
She's pretty much stopped mentioning Sanders. And I think nothing chafes him more than that, you know, that he's no longer part of that news cycle to her, that she won't. I mean, everything I've been watching, and I follow her on all the grams, the Instagram, the pictogram, the Facebook, and all of her feeds, because that's how I roll. Some call it stalking. But she doesn't talk about him anymore. It's no longer like his tax plan doesn't work or anything like that, or, you know, anything. It's now we focus on Trump. Now we focus on Trump. Trump said this. We're moving on. Happy Mother's Day. You know, Bernie Sanders. She doesn't say Bernie Sanders has never been a mother. It's, you know, things like that. She's moved on.
Yeah. I think that's probably the way to go. Like, it doesn't make sense to me to keep at it. I mean, I'm in a weird, you know, my emotions here. This should be the presidential election that I've lived all my life for, where a non-Republican won the Republican nomination and a non-Democrat almost won, or, you know, was a hard contender for the Democratic nomination.
Okay, yeah, we could say a hard contender. Sure.
You are living the Greek tragedy, Jonah. You got exactly what you wished for.
You and I are in this together. Third parties for life. That's it. We're never going back.
You guys have some serious commitment issues.
You can only get cheated on so many times. Yeah, I don't know. Like, so
I mean, what's amazing is, I mean, it seems like America really wants an outsider, doesn't want anybody who's been involved with government to run the government.
You know, what's so just mind-blowing about all of this is we say that, you know, we want a conservative candidate, whatever that means nowadays, because people are calling Trump a conservative. So, you know, obviously it's lost all meaning.
Sure.
But look at all the Christian conservatives in that movement that, you know, voted for Trump. So 4 years, 8 years later, they have not a leg to stand on with their, you know, Christian conservative platform if they voted for Trump, because he is the antithesis of what they believe in.
Well, these are the same Christian, I'm using quotes again, Christian air quotes, who voted for Newt Gingrich, you know. And in fact, someone on one of the morning shows was like, oh, you know, how about a Trump Newt Gingrich team? Wouldn't that be just great? And wouldn't that be, you know, because Newt's been you know, so wonderful and he's so brainy and blah blah blah, and then it would balance Trump. And I'm thinking, can you imagine one woman who would vote for that team? I mean, no. And between them, I mean, they've admitted to cheating on 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 wives? No, 5 wives. At least, and one while she was having in her hospital bed having cancer. So no, I can't imagine that.
I have an anecdotal story about. So I was talking to a friend this weekend about. So she doesn't really pay attention, but kind of pays attention. But I don't know where she gets her sources from. And she said to me that she heard that there's a strong possibility that Trump is going to pick Vince McMahon as his vice presidential.
I heard that too. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, there was a story on that.
Was it? Okay. So I didn't hear that, but that strikes me as something that, first of all, is never, like, I don't see that as a possibility. But the fact that that's out there and that people are like, oh, yeah, I could see that, or like are logically going to have a conversation that's like, I wonder if that's really the best choice for him. Maybe someone, like, if that's a logical conversation where you think through Vince McMahon as the vice president.
Well, look, here's the part that Greg and Emily won't want to talk about.
Okay.
And that is this. Basically, for the last, I would say at least the last 15, probably the last 20 years, there hasn't really been a new idea come out of either major party at all, ever. Everybody is either basically harking back to their own 1993 ideas or borrowing the other party's 1993 or 1990 ideas and dusting them off and saying, oh, these are ours now. Nobody's come up with anything new. And so what they've basically done is beat up the other side. Those guys are terrible. Vote for me. Not even that I'm good, just those guys are terrible. Vote for me. And voters are basically saying, you know what? You're both right. You both suck. We want somebody else.
You know
that's
what?
This is the inevitable conclusion.
I'm not going to say I would love to talk about that. Is absolutely correct. I can think of about. There's not one bill that's been introduced that hasn't gone back to about 1993. I mean, heck, even Obamacare actually dates back to 1997. I think.
Nope, it's earlier.
It's earlier. Okay.
That was part of a raging debate within the Republican Party between the Heritage Foundation on one side and the Cato Institute on the other. Cato Institute won the battle but lost the war because they convinced the Republicans that no, what the Heritage Foundation came up with was a bad idea, but it was sitting there long enough for essentially the Obama administration to pick it up and say, oh, this sounds good. Let's dust it off, throw in a few little Christmas ornaments, light up the Christmas tree and go, here, this is ours now. Yep. That's essentially what happened.
Yep.
And that's basically how it has been. People basically are dusting off old stuff and calling it new and hoping folks don't notice. And then when people do notice, they go, oh yeah, well, those guys are full of lizard people. And well, since lizards can't vote, they figure that's a winning strategy.
Someone's a Zodiac killer, which,
well, you know. Ted Cruz almost proved that wrong, but he didn't.
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost.
I still think. I'm not convinced.
So in any event, basically, you know, no one in 1980, say whatever you want about Ronald Reagan, he won on a positive landslide. He said, if you elect me, I will do A, B, and C, and I will try to do D, E, and F. And he won, and he got reelected. Bill Clinton in 1992 said, hey, if you elect me, I'll try to do A, B, and C, and D, E, and F. He forgot a few of them. He changed up a bunch of them. But back in the 20th century, candidates ran on what they wanted to do. They don't do that anymore. They run on stop the other guy.
But do you think that their congresses, do you think, I mean, at the time, their Congress would say, well, he won. Let's see what we can do to work with the president. Where, I mean, even starting with Bush W, or maybe even with HW, they said, yeah, we're really sore about this one. We're going to do everything to stop anything he implements. I mean, and if that means cutting off our entire nose to spite him, we're going to do that. How many pinkies do we have?
You know, truth be told, though, I don't remember seeing that from Democrats in Bush the Elder's administration. I saw some of that. I saw some of that in Bush the Younger's administration, particularly after 2002.
Yeah.
But I didn't really see that much in Bush the Elder. The problem for the Obama administration was that after the 2010 election, the House, I mean, in 2000, and this was basically the big thing that we've had. We've essentially had the mandate of 2008 going up against the mandate of 2010. And that basically those mandates were at loggerheads for 2 years, and voters in 2012 essentially ratified both of them. I don't know how they managed to pull that off, but they did. And so we are where we are. I think had there been a Republican House of Congress in 2008 that got elected with the president, then the president might have been a little more humble. That Republican chamber might have been more humble. They might have been interested in working something out. But in 2008, the president had a mandate to advance his policies. And in 2010, the Republican House had a mandate to stop his policies. Basically, voters elected an unstoppable force in 2008, and then they elected an immovable object in 2010.
Yeah.
So again, I go back to the people are the problem, and the people were the problem. They haven't made up their minds, and even now they can't make up their minds. Now they say, okay, we want dramatic change, but they're not sure what change they want. Do they want Do they want Bernie Sanders and shifting the country heavily to the left, or do they want Donald Trump and scattering the country in all different directions?
Or is this finally the year for an independent candidate to get above 20% nationally?
Well, this could be the year for that for a couple reasons. One, there are actually folks, the folks that we were talking about, who the Never Trump folks, are actually trying to put together some sort of independent third candidate. I don't think they're going to succeed, mainly because they keep talking about Mitt Romney, which would be an utter disaster.
Yeah.
But absent that, you know, if it also, you know, frankly, it depends on what the Libertarians do. If the Libertarians nominate Austin Peterson or William McAfee, they're not going to go very far, because anybody Peterson talks to, he cheeses off. And well, there's always that risk that the Belizean authorities are going to take Mr. McAfee back because of the unfortunate circumstances surrounding his girlfriend. But if they nominate Gary Johnson, they have a very good shot at cracking some of the ballot trigger marks in Virginia. Here it's 10%. I could see Gary Johnson passing 10% in a Trump-Hillary matchup. I mean, I know he'll have my vote.
If he gets on the debates, I think that's going to be the big issue. If Gary Johnson, if the Libertarian Party can say, look, we've got enough popular blah, blah, blah to get him on a national debate, which in the years past, you know, they've been like, okay, Republican, Democrat, everyone else, we've got a nice cheese buffet backstage for you. Thank you very much for playing.
Well,
if they can get on a national debate, it would change everything. But that's a, you know,
there are a lot of these Republican defectors that, you know, they're split between independent, vague third party, and let's just go to Libertarian because they exist. And because maybe I sort of align that way anyway. And if they all start talking, if these talk radio people, if these newspaper columnists, if they all start pushing for Gary Johnson to be included in those debates, I think that could happen. That seems viable to me.
And here's one other thing to think about, Greg.
Sure.
There are parameters and there are rules, but at the end of the day, it's mainly what the candidates agree on.
Oh yeah.
Do you really? I mean, come on. Let's be honest here. It is completely within Hillary Clinton's interests to insist that Gary Johnson be included in the debates.
Yeah.
Her husband did this twice in 92. Bush and Dole both said they wanted a one-on-one debate, and he said, and Clinton said no, it has to include Perot. In 92, that got Perot in. In 96, it basically meant there was only one debate that nobody paid attention to anyway. So in Clinton's case, she could, if only for a delaying tactic and if only to prevent actually being on the stage with Trump at all, she could certainly say, I will have no debates unless Gary Johnson is included.
Oh, and it would make her look so much more human.
Of course it would. It would make her look, it's a no-brainer for her. And
oh yeah.
And knowing Trump, he could very well be arrogant enough to go, okay, fine, yeah, bring Johnson in, at which point Johnson's in the debate and then he has the opportunity.
Yep. And it would take, because Donald, when he starts taking aim at someone, it's boom, 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 small hands, little Donnie, whatever. And I mean, that's the one thing, you know, Hillary's great at these debates. She is wonderful, but we've never seen someone just completely, hey, sweetheart, hey, blah, blah, blah. We don't know how she's going to handle something like that.
And however she handles it, whether she handles it well, whether she handles it badly.
Right.
If candidate B, usually the normal rule is, and admittedly this is an abnormal year, if candidate A attacks candidate B, candidate C benefits. Well, if candidates A and B start yelling at each other, candidate C, just by looking there and smiling and just tilting the head and saying, you really want more of this? Candidate C looks much better by comparison.
We call that the Kasich rule.
Oh.
Well, you call it the Kasich rule. I
you
still
guys
pull,
can
I
pick
pull out
all
my extremely obscure Nova Scotia election. I call it the John Hamm rule. But this year it could become the Gary Johnson rule.
Seriously, Kasich sat there with a ham sandwich for most of it, or a taco bowl. I mean, he ate a lot. I mean,
the guy likes food. Give him a
he
break.
Likes
Does
food.
It.
Who doesn't? I live in Ohio.
But, you know, I'll say this, is that we are really going to be in for some very interesting stuff, because I think the one direction that Hillary's going to pivot, and I hate to say it, is do you talk to all women like this? I can imagine her right now on the stage basically saying, is this how you treat women? And it being like a huge clip that will run all the way through election day that will want me to just, you know, put nails on a chalkboard. I just see it happening. It's going to happen.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't she do that?
Well, I don't know. I think the other no-brainer, and, you know, just because it's a no-brainer doesn't mean that she'll do it, because she has a tendency to not do those things. But but I do think that at this point, she doesn't need to be explicit about gender at all. Just being the nominee and just standing, you know, against that guy says it all. And that's all. We don't need any words. We just need that picture. And then the super PACs will do that. I don't think she needs to. I don't think it needs to come out of her mouth, other than stuff like equal wage for every American and that kind of thing. Like big sweeping language like that's fine. But I think that if she gets into it, then I don't know how you can make the Trump loyalists angrier. But I think that if you start talking about...
It's not about the Trump loyalists. It is about getting every Republican woman... It's getting every Republican woman in America to vote for someone not named Donald Trump. Whether it's herself or whether it's Gary Johnson, she won't care. So long as they're not voting for Donald Trump, it's a win for her. And that's what she's going to do. The interesting thing about Trump is, I'm going to be curious as to how Trump behaves. Well, we all kind of know how he's going to behave, but... I will believe that Donald Trump is really serious about this sort of thing, that it really wasn't some self-aggrandizing ploy gone thoroughly awry, that this wasn't a publicity stunt that he lost control of. I'll believe that he's serious if he mentions one word. Can anyone guess what that word is? Jonah? Well, good. Greg, you can try first.
Trump vodka?
One word.
Vodka.
No. Jonah?
Oh, ERA.
No. Emily?
Anything about this isn't European fair to elections.
UN. No. This is Trump and Clinton, not me. Not that.
Ivanka, is it his daughter?
No. The correct answer is Whitewater. He mentions Whitewater, then I'll believe he's serious. Because her fingerprints are all over that. And millennial voters, if they hear Hillary Clinton was part of a real estate scheme that cost the government $50 million in the savings and loan scandal, that might be enough for them to stake. Say, wait, what?
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Whitewater that she was completely absolved of, and after a congressional hearing, and
no,
she actually...
No, she wasn't. They absolved him because her fingerprints were all over it. He was absolved. She wasn't. In fact, she was listed, I think, once as an unindicted co-conspirator, if memory serves.
So I don't think that resonates. If we're talking about millennials, like,
yeah, 20 years ago,
the one benefit that she has at this point is that if we mention any of those things, if they come up in the campaign, I think anyone that's our age or older, if you're already anti her, you're like, that's right, I don't like her. But if you're already like kind of on the fence, you're like, that was years ago. What about now? And millennials will go, I don't even know what you're talking about. Let's move on.
Yeah, I just looked it up. The Clintons were never charged. Both the Clintons were never charged for anything with Whitewater.
Yeah, but their business partners went to jail. His success, his successor as governor was forced out of office.
And I think that's wonderful. And you know what? I know all sorts of terrible people. And now you're guilt by association. But now this is 20 years ago. And if we go through everybody who Trump worked with, who ever did something shady.
Whoa. Now you're assuming things I haven't said. I'm not saying that Trump isn't going to get blowback. What I'm saying is he is bringing up the affairs and saying that she was an enabler for him. So he's already bringing up stuff from 20 years ago. It's the stuff he brings up from 20 years ago that tells me whether he's really serious about it. If he keeps bringing up the sex scandals, then I know he's not serious. It's a publicity stunt. If he brings up money, then I know he's serious.
Okay.
As a millennial, so let's circle back real quick. So as a millennial, I hear what you're saying, DJ, and for someone who is paying attention way more than the average bear, that might resonate. But as a millennial, which I'm very closely in that generation, you know, if I were a Democrat and I talked to my Democrat friends who like Hillary Clinton or do not like Hillary Clinton, talk to them about both candidates, you know what they tell me? The number one thing that they don't like about her, it's perception. It's not a specific scandal. It's not, you know, anything that she's done. It's not Benghazi. For millennials that I've talked to that are Democrats, it's that they feel like she's out of touch. She's a really rich white lady who doesn't even drive her own car, who's out of touch with reality. That's what I hear from my Democratic millennial friends.
Well, then her entire campaign strategy, is going to be very simple. It is going to be get everybody who doesn't like me to vote for Gary Johnson. That's it. It's over. Mm.
So I'm not a big Hillary Clinton fan.
Right. And you and I are voting for Gary Johnson. So she's two down, 50 million to go.
I'm sorry. I've got 4 months to work on you.
So I
don't be worried about that.
But I kind of feel like all of the stuff from Arkansas and from the Clinton administration, I don't care about that anymore. Like, it's over.
And
there are plenty of reasons, and she's going to give us plenty of reasons for me to be mad and to continue to be annoyed with the things that she does.
Let's just say mildly upset, not mad.
And I guess I just sort of feel like if it's already been out there and it's already been in the public discussion, then and it was from 5 years ago or more, let's say, then it's not in this discussion. Now, there's a lot of stuff about Donald Trump that no one has ever talked about. And so if something that he did 20 years ago comes up now that nobody knew about, I think it's fair game because it hasn't gotten this light. But I sort of feel like she's going to put her foot in her mouth a bunch more. And we're going to get more about this and that and all the, and people are going to come forward and talk about hacking this and whatever. And there'll be all kinds of crazy accusations. And that's fine. That's new. Maybe there's something there. Maybe there's not. But I feel like the old stuff is old. And she's lasted this long. So if I don't know, like, it, that doesn't resonate for me for this election.
And you could very well be right, Joan. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that if Donald Trump is going to reach back to 20 years ago, which he's already doing.
Yeah.
Even if you assume that stuff has validity, and we can disagree about that, he's reaching, in my opinion, he's reaching for the wrong stuff. And the fact that he's reaching for the wrong stuff and then he continues to do it tells me that even probably deep down in his own mind, he's thinking, oh my God, do I really want to do this? Do I want to be stuck in the White House with Secret Service watching me all the time? I'm just saying, if he is serious, I think he would go for that. I'm not saying it would work, because you all make some very valid points that it probably won't work. But what he is doing, I think we can all agree, certainly won't work. And like I said, I think at the end of the day, a lot of her strategy will involve taking never Hillary voters like myself. I don't know if Joan is in that category, and basically shoving us to Gary Johnson, because so long as we vote for Gary Johnson, there's a much greater chance that the ones who are left voting for Trump will not be enough to beat her. I still say that essentially, there is really only one thing Hillary Clinton has to do to be elected president, and that is not die. But shoving anti-Hillary votes to Gary Johnson will certainly help pad the result.
Yeah. I think the next issue is, besides Clinton, of course, is winning the Senate, winning Congress. But also, when you think about, according to Real Clear, there was a poll, Georgia is in play this year to be blue.
Yeah.
Okay. And for the first time, I mean, Georgia has been in play. It's a pretty solid red or, you know, state. But
though. Clinton carried it 20 years ago.
Okay. 20 years ago. Right. But Trump is up by 1 point, which just fascinates me.
Wow. So Bill's going to be down there a lot.
Oh, gosh.
Probably.
Yes.
I'm Bill, I would be.
I mean,
he does love the Southern Belles.
She won't even need Ohio or Florida at this point.
Well, she'll get them anyway.
Well, she'll get them anyway. Yeah. That's not really the point, though.
No, I mean, this again, Mrs. Clinton is going forward as the presumptive favorite.
Right.
And there's good reason to believe she'll continue to be the favorite. And in addition, she has a backup strategy, which is one that never Trumpers like myself will gleefully be happy with her doing.
Is it the Manchurian candidate?
Say again?
The Manchurian candidate?
No, just propping up Johnson as an alternative to Trump as often as possible. Sure. And, you know, that's... I'm perfectly fine with that right now.
So I just got a text from a friend that said they're vetting Sarah Palin to be Trump's running mate. Woo-hoo! Oh, my God.
I would love it. I don't see it. I don't see it.
If that happens, I'll know the whole thing was a publicity stunt.
And oh, by the way, she has already said that she's supporting Paul Ryan's primary opponent in Wisconsin.
Yeah, sure. Because she's a heavy, and she carries weight in Wisconsin.
I hope that was a joke. I hope that text was a joke.
He does have a primary opponent this year.
Sarah Palin.
No, she's really a lobbying for it.
She's a thinker.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Paul Ryan's a Miami grad too. He graduated I think 2 years before I did. So I'm going to throw that out there. A lot of really smart guys went to Miami. So. That's Oxford, Ohio.
Home of Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, don't even get me started. What an asshole he is. Oh, my gosh.
You drop a Steelers name to a Cincinnati resident. And
I know, and
cool.
I enjoyed every bit of it.
Oh, what a jerk.
So, guys, where do we go from here? I mean, so we have some other exciting things besides the dismal Republican races going on. So what else is going on out there?
At this point, we're in kind of a holding pattern until the end of May. We have to see what the Libertarians actually do. We have to see if the folks who are serious about this independent conservative actually do it, and by the way, if they do with Mitt Romney, if they go with Mitt Romney, they're not serious.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much where we are.
So besides Mitt Romney, is there anybody else? Rob Portman just already. Endorsed from Ohio senator, he already endorsed Trump. His office said, which boggles my mind, but okay, sure. But besides, you know, Romney, is there any other names that maybe you'd like to see?
You mean parachuted in the last second?
Yeah, like screaming the music, I am a real American.
Who's body slam. Right? Like, who would be a credible candidate that you wouldn't like, oh, Romney's doing it again, roll your eyes, or like
some, Huntsman. Like some, maybe Huntsman?
See, I think
what?
He's not. He's,
what? No. Whoa.
He's not a big enough name.
No. And by the way, Huntsman has already endorsed Trump.
Has he really?
Did you miss that part?
I missed that.
Yeah,
that's very sad.
Huntsman's endorsed Trump, and that's which I think just says everything about the complete lack of spine in what we call the Republican establishment.
That is sad.
Yeah.
So my dream is to see Kasich and Cruz flying in on two large winged eagles, roping and lassoing Trump, pulling him off the stage and then landing.
We should all dream.
No. Dream big. But yeah.
So on a serious note, I actually am going to Cleveland next week, so I'll make sure I send everybody pictures before it gets burned to the ground.
Oh, wonderful.
It's gonna be a party.
So here what I think we should do then is, at least over the next few weeks, we'll just keep asking this question because it may be the only thing that interests us at this point. And we'll start on the Republican side. Let's do quick guesses. Who do you think Trump will actually pick as the running mate? Emily, go.
Oh, man. I think it's going to be Scott.
Scott Walker?
No. Governor Rick Scott.
Scott. Oh, Rick Scott. Scott. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah. I would have to say, now that he just announced today that he endorsed him, Rick Perry.
Jonah?
Governor, yeah.
He said he's looking for a politician, and I believe him with that, so I don't think it'll be Vince McMahon, but I think it'll, I don't know, I think it'll be somebody, the effect will be similar to when Quayle got the nod. It'll be like, wait, who? Wait, what state was that? Oh, yeah, that guy. Okay.
Okay, that guy. Interesting.
That guy.
I am actually gonna lean with Emily and go with Governor Rick Scott.
I have a theory about Vince McMahon. I think he's courting Vince McMahon until he gets the rights to the Let's Get Ready to Rumble, because Vince McMahon keeps that under lock and key. But that's it. So, you know, once he gets those rights, he's going to say, sorry, Vince, you're out.
But, yeah. Well, I think we're out, too.
Yeah. Oh, so let's get ready to close it up.
Yeah. So find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Go to Facebook and, you know, interact with us there, because we're so interactivitable. And then you go to iTunes and you review us and you rate us. And then you share it for all of your friends. And then they'll think you're super smart, because they'll probably won't listen to us. But they'll look at it and it's like, oh, that guy likes politics. That's cool. So until next time, thank you for listening. We'll see you later.